Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Sequel Pitch, where four friends pit their movie sequel ideas against each other in a bid to become the Pitch King. Fresh off of victory last time out, I'm Matt Rushton, and I'm your host this week. And joining me, as ever, he can get a lot done in a day. He just chooses not to. It's Andy Henry.
Yes, it's a shame I'm incredibly lazy. You can also get not a lot done in a day.
Next up, he has the wrist-twisting power of the timekeepers, but it's mostly because of his late-night solo antics. It's Ross Harmston.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to know what I get up to.
We really don't. Trust me, we've known him long enough, you really don't. And, of course, last but by no means least, he is forever seconds away from disaster and also seconds away from not completing his pitch. It's true, Toby.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, hello, chaps. How are we all?
Very good. You sound healthy as ever, Matt.
Yeah.
I am bursting with energy. I can't tell you this week. I'm battling toddler flu. My darling children have brought it home to me, so I do apologise in advance for my... ever so nasally congested sounding.
I told you not to have them, but you wouldn't listen. So.
Well, I was gunning for one and got two, so I get double the germs.
The bad one brought the flu back with him, yeah. Come
on. So as the title clearly spells out to you, this week we are pitching sequels to the 2011 sci-fi action adventure-y thing In Time with Justin Timberlake, Amanda Seyfried, Cillian Murphy, who is hot to trot right now, and to name just a few others. As I've said, I am a little bit down with the toddler flu, but that isn't going to stop me from trying to deliver a 60-second synopsis. If anything, I wrote less because I was like, I don't want to talk too much today. Fair. So, that time will kick off right now. There is green gooey exposition that tells us now humans stop aging at 25, but they only have 1 year to live on their body clock. Time is now currency, and everything is dealt in time.
Right.
So after treating his mum, giving some time to some kid, and moaning about the price of coffee, Will Sellers, played by JT, saves a very rich man in a bar from Alex Rider, that's all I know him from, and they hide in a factory. The rich man reveals he's 105 years old. He tells Will the truth about the rich up in taxes, the cost of living, to ensure that folk keep dying. Ah, sounds familiar. Whilst asleep, he gives Will and all of his time before killing himself. And the chase continues. Will leaves happy at the beginning with his new life with lots of time. However, that all comes crashing down when his mother can't get on a bus because she only has 90 minutes left on her time, but it's now 2 hours to get her bus home. She's running, they're running, they're both running at each other for a long, long time. And just as he reaches her, she dies. So he's now very angry. He swears vengeance on New Greenwich and all the rich people. He goes there, beats this man, Philip Vice, in a game of poker, takes his daughter hostage in a bid to escape, then later tries to ransom her to get Vice to pay about 100 million or something to the dying and the poor. That doesn't happen. So Will and Sylvia, Sylvia's Amanda Seyfried, they survive just about with time for ages. They kill a bunch of Minutemen. She becomes a vigilante with him and turns on her dad. They kill some timekeepers. They distribute stolen time to the poor time zones, freeing them. It's a bit like, what's it called? Hunger Games and all that stuff. And there's revolution. And then the movie ends with them robbing a huge, huge bank. I don't think there's much more to kind of cover there, to be honest. We'll go into details on some of the minutiae of the film, I'm sure, in our extended one. But for now, I'll just get some initial thoughts and scores. Please, chaps, let's go. Andy, we'll crack on with you first. Let's go alphabetically.
Oh, it's a shame. I like this movie, just not all of it. I had a good premise. I think it went on like 20 minutes too long. It felt like a short story that someone, like, I know there was a copyright lawsuit around it, but I don't know if the guy who actually wrote the, I can't remember his name, the guy who actually wrote the movie, if he based it off a short story or something like that. But it seemed like it was like a short hour-long movie that they had to kind of like... I think put Amanda Seyfried's character in to kind of like move the time a little bit. It's good, but I don't think when you kind of, if you read the blurb, I don't think you get the movie that you're hoping for. But still good bits and very I still recommend. I'm going to give it a very low 3 seconds. Because I think it's worth seeing, but it's not amazing.
Cool. Mm. Interesting, it's only 105 minutes long, including credits as well, and you still found it was a little bit long. So
yeah, well, some bits definitely really just felt like they were dragging. And yeah.
Drew, over to you.
Very, I think quite similar to Andy, honestly. It's I really like this film, despite the fact that I'm going to have so much to talk about this movie. I like it because conceptually it's incredibly anti-capitalist, and it's just like, hey, what can we do as the most blatant allegory for the system that the world operates on now, but just make it even more bastardy? And they do that. I love the fact that the very opening narration is just like, why do we have these green glowing clocks in our arms? No, I don't have time to tell you. You fucking cop out. Like the idea, like it's a really, really strong premise, and I think Justin Timberlake does a good job. Amanda Seyfried's good in it. It's a bit of a romp with a quite sort of intense message about inequality that it wants to get out there, which is great. But it is also riddled with issues, like the fact that the costume designer enjoyed The Matrix too much, and at least dressed all the baddies in The Matrix gear. Like before I rewatched it, I remembered everyone in this movie being dressed like Neo for the entire runtime, and it's not that, luckily. Like it's the baddies who are dressed like they're from that film. I can't keep going into things that I liked or didn't. We have an entirely separate podcast for that. So I'm going to go in at 3.5 fully booked out hotel rooms for privacy, fully booked out hotels for privacy where you are immediately discovered out of 5.
Excellent stuff. Ross, over to you.
I thought this movie was meh. It's very mid for me. I thought it was an interesting concept, executed as safely as they could. I felt like, well, I'll go into detail more in the review, but yeah, there's a few bits I was just like, oh, I'd rather be watching this actually than In Time. But yeah, it was okay. I wouldn't watch it again, I don't think. Interesting concept. Yeah. And that's all I can say. So I'm going to give it 2 really bad CGI car crashes out of 5.
Yeah, I'll say that car crash wasn't the smoothest thing I've ever seen on TV or film.
Why did they not fly out of the car? How did they not just like go
seatbelts?
Yeah, that's seatbelts.
There's no. But yeah, they should be dead. Yeah. They should be just so unbelievably dead.
Anyway, it's a movie, I know.
For me, it's, I think we're kind of all hitting on the same nail. Like the concept, conceptually, it's fantastic, and in the kind of world that we're living in right now, I felt it more poignant than ever. Kind of watching it and kind of seeing how it reflects. This was 12 years ago, and yeah, it still reflects very much true to the day in some ways. Yeah, there was goods and bad, pros and cons, as with most films that we kind of discuss on here these days. But yeah, I did enjoy it and was pleasantly surprised by Timberlake's performance in it and whatnot as well. Some good moments and some very good anti-capitalist messaging. However, is it for everyone? Probably not, especially if you're into capitalism. So maybe don't watch this film if you are rich and like to keep holding your money. But I will score it. Yeah, I think I would do 3.5 terrible, terrible wig choices for Amanda Seyfried.
Be fair,
so there you go. What does that give us in total numbers, people?
It is a flat 3.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow.
Nice. A bang on recommendation. Mm. One of the only, like, in fact, yeah, interestingly, as far as I can tell, the only whole numbers that we've ever scored were another flat 3, which was Fast and Furious 8, which seems about fair.
Yeah.
The Conjuring 3.
Yeah.
And then the rest are all when it's got 5 out of 5. So, yeah, kind of interesting.
Nice.
There we go.
Not that interesting. Kind of boring, honestly. Only interesting if you're...
It gets the recommendation just about, despite Ross trying to hold everyone back from watching it. It will get people watching it now, so you're welcome. Excellent. You've heard our initial thoughts. As always, if you want to hear us dive deep into this movie and it sounds like everyone's got something good to say about it, you head on over to patreon.com/sequelpitch. Become one of our wonderful pitch pals and you get to hear us all digesting, using what time we have left to talk about the movie and whether it's good, bad, or just in between. But for now, we are running out of time, so it is time to get your sequels pitched. Wee. As always, we are going to dive into your pitches, gentlemen. You are going to deliver your best sequel pitches to in time. I may have questions for you. I may just let you fight it out. I may just decide without even letting you if there's one clear winner. But I doubt that'll happen, because where's the fun in that? So we are going to go this week. Who shall I kick off with? Listeners, you can't see him, but he's wearing the most fabulous shirt today. Ross Hobson, I'm going to go to you first.
Okie dokie.
His shirt looks like a really nice pair of curtains that my parents had in the 90s.
Yeah. Always shop vintage, baby. Okay. My title is called Time Unbound. Set 10 years later, and with the abolishment of the time zones, the wealthy, now known as the new elite, have found a new way to seize power. JT, i.e. Justin Timberlake, uncovers the new elite's plot to find the creation of this system and use it to bring everlasting life. Okay. The movie opens and we see a bank heist and it's all proper cool. And my inspiration for this scene would be the opening scene of Dark Knight. We see all these masked men taking time from this well-known rich bank. They kill a few innocent guards, and one of the guards asks the guy, "Who are you?" And then the leader takes off his mask to reveal John Boyega, and he says, "We are the Time Renegades." cut to title. We then see Justin Timberlake. He's living a normal life with Sylvia, who is now pregnant with their child because, you know, for reasons. He looks at his arm, and he's got loads of time. He sees on the news another bank was heisted. Is that a word? It is now. And some innocent people died. They show John Boyega on the screen and give a little backstory to him. And we learn that JT actually started the Time Renegades, but we don't learn as to why he left. We know that he left, though. Both JT and Sylvia start talking about it. And JT's like, I need to do something. she's just like, leave it and focus on us. He's like, nah, that's not what I set out for the Time Renegades to become. So then we see an interview on the news to one of the benefactors that had loads of money in the time in the bank. Sorry. It's Benedict Cumberbatch as Leonard Kane. We get evil vibes from him. He says that he owns his own time mercs will find the perpetrators and bring them back to justice. So Justin goes for a walk. We get establishment of, like, there are no more time zones, but the rich still hoard over the poor. But in new ways now, we get like him maybe giving loads of people some time as he goes down the street. And then he goes to someone he knows that can find and arrange a meet with John Boyega. So he goes to meet John Boyega. They have a cool chat about morality of killing people to give time to the poor. and are his methods truly what JT originally intended? Boyega is like, you left me in charge and I did what you couldn't do. JT is like, this will never change anything. Then suddenly the time mercs attack. Insert 10-minute chase sequence and maybe John's girlfriend, John Boyega's girlfriend, gets killed. So he vows revenge on Leonard Kane. Yeah. Maybe.
But maybe not.
The character that's so important, it's got a name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He asks JT to help, and JT feels he can, like, maybe he agrees because maybe he can get through to him. So they plan a big heist to steal all of Kane's money. This will echo like a Mission Impossible-style heist with disguises, guns, chases, and loads of cool infiltrations and shit. And this will be a big bit of the movie. JT, along the way, tries to reason with Boyega. Anyway, they get to the vault. They get to Kane's vault after this whole massive heist. But they're confronted by Kane and his men. Insert bad guy speech. Kane reveals his forearm, and the clock says zero. And they're like, what the fuck? He basically says that he has the original machine that created this system within humans, and he has, and now he has the power to live forever, and he will create a new society of the new elite and let everyone else die. And a fight ensues. Kane is killed. John Boyega then gets the machine and is like, "We can use this to get rid of the elite, JT. Come on, Justin Timberlake." Then they have a moral debate. Which ends in John Boyega turning on JT. Maybe he shoots him or something, but like only in like at the arm. Then we insert the 20-minute finale of the film, him chasing after Boyega, and it ends with a cool fight, and each punch like transfers time to each other until John finds he has no time left and dies. JT is left with the power in his hand, but what does he do? The movie ends with a flashback to when John Boyega stole the machine, leaving a message to the world if he doesn't survive. Then JT has saying that JT has this machine and that it can change the world. Kind of like the end of Spider-Man No Way Home. Like he does this thing where he's setting up for the next movie. And then the next movie I see is like a John Wick style thing where everyone is trying to get hold of this machine. You know, in the bit where he gets excommunicado, and then everyone's against him. So then that would be the next one. Ah, shit.
Nice. Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that, Ross. I guess what was the inspiration for this movie? Why did you decide to go with the kind of origin of the device?
Well, you know, I wanted a MacGuffin thing. So, like, there must be something that created this thing inside humans, so why can't it be this machine? And it doesn't have to be a huge machine. Maybe it's like a thing that they put on their arm and it like, or it goes on their heart or something, I don't know, and it inserts something into their body that means they only live till they're 25. But like, it maybe it's a suppressant or something, I don't know. But I don't know, I thought like, let's delve a little bit deeper into the machine, and maybe we can discuss the machine in the third movie more as well. And so you get more of the lore, because I feel like that's the biggest question that I had from the movie. I was like, "What's this? What is this? Why are they got clocks in their arms? What is it?" And so I wanted to kind of vaguely tease it a little bit with saying that there's a machine, so people go, "Oh shit!"
Perfect. No, thank you for that. That is my only question. Next up, we are going to go continuing the reverse order. Drew, I'll come to you this time, man.
Okay. I've gone for the title Unbound in Time.
You bastard.
Like, full disclosure for the listeners. We're recording this one a lot sooner than we normally do, and I've had an awful lot of childcare responsibilities. My son is a force of nature at the moment, and so once again, I arrived with an unfinished pitch. And while we were discussing in the full review, which you'll have to subscribe to the Patreon to hear. I had an idea, and so I am winging it ever so slightly / entirely, but here we go. Unbound in Time, we have our protagonist, Sarah, and she works for the Reconstruction Bureau, which is an organization that was built kind of by the citizenry. Right, let's go back. After Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried destroy the system, it does get destabilized. It's been like a whole generation. It's been like another 25 years or so. There's kind of things are functioning with effectively universal basic income. And Sarah works for the bureau that tries to sort of keep everything in balance. And we find out that they are struggling to make it work. Like, as we've discussed, people just start being like, they go to economists and professors and they're like, we need to figure out how, like, where's this time coming from? Where do we get more time? Like, as people are being born and money's being distributed and all of this kind of stuff, the world is starting to crumble again and they need a better solution. They effectively need to learn how to turn this off. And Sarah's family are involved, like there are big riots and people and things are starting to go wrong, and her family are endangered, and she's like, right, I've got to get to the bottom of this. And it's a shorter pitch, I'm very sorry, I deserve not to win this one, that's fine. My pitch effectively is Sarah goes on a big journey and discovers that
I'm so interested to see what she discovers.
Oh man, yeah, No. I know what she discovers. I know what she discovers. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to say it. You know when they showed the map of the world, and it was just the 12 kind of districts.
Yeah.
We learn over the course of the movie that everyone who lives in the districts, like the rest of the world outside, has been like irradiated, and she uncovers a bunch of stuff and they basically say the system was built and started because World War III happened. This is the only place where people survived and we needed a new system, and this came along and it happened. And she's like, oh, that doesn't seem good enough. It's a cross between the Truman Show and the fucking Matrix. And she discovers in the end that they are trapped, and it's just been a giant social experiment for like 300 years where a bunch of people were trapped in and had this system forced on them just to study how they would deal with it and what they would do. And she like has to figure out a way to convince everyone to rise up and work out how to escape, which they eventually do. And then they're released into the world where other people live normal lives. And now these guys are immortal, but they've all got the clocks and they've got to keep them going. And oh my God, how are they going to deal with that? And it ends on a big, like, ooh.
Wow, there you go. Thank you very much. Inspired. What kind of, same question as I asked Ross, what was your kind of, from your concept, from your initial concept, yeah, what was that inspiration? What inspired you with that?
We discussing this movie when we were just like, hang on, how does this work? What could possibly be, how in any way could it be practically explained that this system came into existence? And my brain kind of exploded just trying to actually make that make sense. Cause I've watched this movie so many fucking times and I'd never interrogated that actual question that deeply, probably because it's just fucking nonsense. And I was like, right, okay. The only way that I can see this working that would make some kind of sense is if it's like the world is if this isn't the whole world, because it makes no sense otherwise. It just makes no sense. The only, like, the first movie explained pretty well why it's there and that the rich people wanted to live forever, and I didn't want this movie just to end up being like, oh, the rich people are building an army so they can put the system back in place and the other people have to rise up and stop them, which is fine, but it didn't feel like enough. And then I just had this insane thought in my brain of, oh, it's kind of like The Matrix. And then my brain just went, Matrix, Truman's Show, it's all an experiment. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I get strong The Village vibes as well. Yes, yeah, yeah. Behind the wall. Fantastic. Right then, Andy, over to you for a third pitch of the evening.
I thought Drew's was gonna go on. It sounded very much like a short film idea I had that I told him about just a few days ago, and I was like, wait a minute. Okay, so my titles I might have to change them because they may be copyrighted, but your choice is In Time 2, No Time to Die. In Time 2, The Land Before Time. In Time 2, Hot Tub Time Machine. In Time 2, The Land Before Time 2. But I'm going to go with In Time 2.
The Land Before Time.
Also, What's the Time, which I thought was quite funny. But I'm going to go with In Time 2, Out of Time.
Nice.
And my little blurb is, when someone's clock stops ticking but they stay alive, a new mystery is opened upon everyone's simple life. Okay. So, over the last 100 years, people have been crossing time zones and setting up new lives. As everyone has had enough time to never have to work again, they've started to live more and enjoy their life and focus on the good things. As people started living hundreds of years, resources started to diminish because people obviously aren't doing work and stuff like that. And more people are being born, so food and obviously water and all like natural resources are going down. Dangerous fights break out between people who are literally fighting for like luxuries in life, even like little things like there's not enough staff at like hotels, so they have limited hotels, and then everyone wants to go to a hotel, but there's not enough hotels to have everyone. So big fights, even for the luxury things as well as the stupid things like food. Population starts to go up. Not the hotels. And...
could have just been like food.
It's everything. No one's working.
No, mate. I get it's yeah. just the fact that the example you go to is hotels, not food.
Yeah, there's food anyway. And stuff as well. But like, I want to say, like, it's these little things as well that people were like, because they've had it for so long.
Yeah,
they think they almost like deserve it and stuff. Like pubs. There's not enough pubs, and people want to have drinks. But the population starts to go down as resources can't go on, and people choose to have extravagant lifestyles and like die at either the age of 20 because they pay for so much, or they OD on drugs or alcohol. Naturally, the country starts to segregate itself into neighborhoods. At one point in time, everyone woke up to find exactly 100 years on their wrist clocks, and all time stores had been permanently shut. Timekeepers kind of entered these neighborhoods and told stories of the Time Giver, who started people's clocks once they were born. And the time giver gave the timekeepers new rules for everyone to follow. So that's why they're there kind of explaining these new rules. Everyone has the same amount of time. You still have to pay for things with time or punishments and stuff like that. But when your clock runs out, you die for good. You can't like buy more time or anything like that. But you can basically live how you want. People are now live on average, they get 100 years, but they live on average to about 50 if they have a normal life, like a reasonably happy life. But again, extravagant people who just like party all day and stuff live to about 20. So we wake up and we see Aaron, played by Neil Patrick Harris. He has a good life with a family and his husband, played by Jim Parsons. He wakes up and it's his 50th birthday, and he goes downstairs, says goodbye to his husband, David. And his kids, they have older kids and stuff, so they're there in the start of the pitch, but not in the end. The neighborhoods are now quite small, so everyone knows everyone's like death day, and it's kind of treated like a birthday. So no one's sad, everyone's happy. So Aaron goes through town saying his goodbyes to everyone, and Aaron, like, he's not sad. He like thanks the Time Giver for starting his clock in the first place when he was born. And everyone, we basically go have a little bit of symbolism around religion and God, and everyone praising the, you know, the timekeeper. We see everyone is happy, and a few people are working in the hotels and pubs. People say they're living their best life, but to be honest, they all appear a little bit bored. So Aaron, his clock is nearly done. He heads out to a nostalgic place and waits for his clock to run out. It counts down to zero, but he doesn't die. He wonders what the fuck is going on and starts to drive home. Excited to see his family, he speeds over the limit and is stopped by a timekeeper and has to pay the fine of one day. He's nervous because obviously he doesn't want to show his clock, but the timekeeper like grabs his wrist, kind of turning it, inadvertently hiding the clock, scans Aaron's wrist, and the fine is paid, and the timekeeper leaves. Aaron's more confused, and he drives home. At the timekeeper's HQ, Trent, the main timekeeper captain that we'll be following, is looking at data of purchases when he notices Aaron's name has come up and stuff. And obviously, it's a small neighborhood. He knows Aaron. He knows that Aaron was going to die on that day. He wonders how this purchase can be made when he should have died, gets curious, and starts to investigate. Aaron gets home and tells David what's happened, and David's obviously a bit confused, but obviously really happy to see him. Trent and other timekeepers arrive to question Aaron, and Trent sees the 13 zeros on his arm. He questions Aaron about the counterfeit time and says, "Did you hack your wrist, like, somehow?" As no one has ever obviously lived past their clock. Aaron says, why can't he just live for free and stuff? And Trent says that people need consequences for their actions. For example, you know, if you speed, you need to pay a fine. If you don't, everyone would speed and there'd be lots of deaths. Aaron says Trent's closed-minded and only sees the negative in people. A fight breaks out, obviously, as the timekeepers try to arrest Aaron and David, but they escape. So act two is Aaron and David trying to figure out what's going on, diving deeper into the mystery of the time giver and what happened when everyone woke up with 100 years on their wrist. Along the way, as well as some action scenes of Aaron and David fighting and fleeing the timekeepers, word gets out to the other neighborhoods, especially Aaron's neighborhood, that he's still living and not having to pay for anything. And everyone starts to get jealous. So when Aaron tries to reach out for help, most people betray him. People start like questioning why Aaron's so special in the eyes of the time giver. Start questioning the time givers, like, just way, leading to the timekeepers to come in, trying to spread the message of the faith of the timekeeper. Everything's fine. He was the one who kind of like gave them life, gave these rules. He's the reason why you're happy. Don't question it. This obviously like kind of stirs the crowd, and a fight breaks out between the civilians and the timekeepers. Aaron enters and has a rousing speech about the meaning of life and having control over it and being able to do what you want, but also the purpose of life, kind of what you need to do in life to actually have a fulfilled life. You can't just go on hotels everywhere. They should also have the power to live where they want, for how long they want, doing what they want. And then the final act is Aaron and David interrogate a timekeeper who's like turned after hearing Aaron's rousing speech, and tells them that he knows a bit of information about the time giver. And he says what he knows is basically where the time giver is, there is no time. And he provides like a riddle or something he's learned about the location. Trent comes in, shoots the timekeeper, and tells Aaron and David they shouldn't question perfection. And there's which leads to a big fight. Aaron and David leave. This whole time, obviously, David was coming up to his 50th birthday. So he's like, shit, we need to get you into to see the time giver because there's no time there. And he doesn't make it. David dies just as Aaron and Trent have their last fight. You know, like something happens and like a ripple or something happens, like a rip in time happens. Aaron, like, I don't want him to kill the Trent because I want him, if there's going to be an after credit scene, he's going to dive through the ripple. But basically Aaron is, at the end of the film, is Aaron walking into this ripple to meet the time giver. Maybe at the end, Trent dives in to try and pull him out, but eventually gets pulled in with him.
Okay.
I fell down a rabbit hole doing research for this movie, and I was just like, I need a writer's pitch, but I was like, again, like the others, where the fuck does the time come from? Like, and I needed to know that before I could write a pitch. So, yeah.
No, yeah, you definitely started tearing a new time, a new one, didn't you? Cool. What was... So I guess you kind of touched on it in your research and rabbit holing, but what was the kind of thought for you that you locked on? Where does time come from for you then?
So yeah, like the first one with the symbolism of like the rich versus poor, I wanted something big in this one. And I get like the only thing I could like think about was, you know, where, if this time, if who gives time slash life, it's God. So let's have some sort of God in this where Aaron is trying to meet him to kind of, yeah, question life. What the fuck's going on?
Good stuff. Thank you very much. I've not got any more questions for now. I've got some genuine stuff to ponder over here between the three. I mean, three very different pitches, which I always love it when they come in so different. But of course, while I need to ponder, I need your advice and I need your input. So I'm going to let you all take your gloves off and let you all beat the time out of each other and tell me why your pitch is the best one.
Come on, pick mine.
I was about to praise Ross's, The idea of a punch up where life time force effectively gets transferred with it. That's sick. That's really cool. You started.
No, I was just going to say, you should pick mine. I've got a good cast, John Boyega and Michael Fassbender. Benedict Cumberbatch. Don't even know who I fucking cast in my own food movie. Drew's, it might as well have just gone, it was all a dream. You know that
Absolutely
movie?
Absolutely not.
You might as well have just watched another movie for two movies. It was all a dream.
I would argue that yours is almost the same. Yours is like, I am the one man who can actually live forever. I am unbound by this system that was all started with this magical machine. How does it work? Who
that
knows?
He has.
How did
you find out in the next
how did
movie?
I, will we though? Yeah. Will we? Because we're not going to do another episode.
And Ross puts. Ross just asks so many questions and doesn't answer them. I answer a few in mine, and it intrigues you. Like, where's the fuck? Yeah, that's the same though. But I give you some answers.
You give none. You go.
Where's this machine
this
come
is
from?
An interesting concept, but I'm not gonna fucking explain anything of mine. Why has he got down to zero?
You didn't explain it. A time giver.
Yeah, what? Time giver, time receiver.
Why does time Jesus
like Aaron?
No,
we don't know. We don't know whether he likes him yet.
So
maybe
why
he
are
was.
We just
maybe
sitting
he's,
through
maybe
your
he's a
entire
messiah.
Movie, just going. Oh, I don't even know why the fucking. Why is he so special? Oh, you're gonna have to find out.
Some things
you're
gonna wait
movie.
To the third. I don't wait. I'm not like you, and I have everything explained in the third.
I
explain some
everything.
In the second.
I'm just explaining
you've
what
got,
the machine
you're
is.
You're just like, oh, we explain with the time machine, how he just came upon the time
you
machine.
Just, you just
in
do.
The third.
Oh, there's a ripple in fucking time, and he just wanders through the fucking ripple.
Ross is, yeah, Ross, but again, Ross maybe is, maybe that's the god opening. Maybe he actually wants to speak to him.
Also, yeah, there's
but
no,
mine
what does he want
is
to
intriguing.
Say,
Andy? Yours is just confusing.
Like my pitch might be very very thin and would need a lot more filling out, but at least it has. Some sort of ending, like Ross's ends with ooh, like I can Ross's kind of works. Although I feel like ending it on a where Justin Timberlake has the power to change the system when he explicitly at the end of the last one is like no one should live forever, and then to end the movie with him being like, do I press the magical switch off?
I was going to end it with him smashing it to pieces. But I was like, I could make another one and you could make it where he smashes it, or we could make another one where it's like, you know, at the end of this third movie, smashes it at the end of the third movie. But anyway.
I like the version of Deathly Hallows, the elder one.
I like that. And Andy, he's like, yeah, there's no more time zones. But now everyone's back in neighborhoods and
because
that
is humankind. I wanted to have that like idea that man is just meant to like war. No matter what happens, you don't have fucking Justin Timberlake
in your movie.
Well, no, because it's set like 100 years afterwards. How is Justin Timberlake still going to be 25 in yours?
Yeah, I do agree with Andy on that notion. Like,
That's why I chose him. He literally is ageless. He looks exactly the same, to be fair. He
Look
25. He didn't look 25 in the first one. I don't know. I actually don't know how old he was.
I mean,
actually, as well. So JT sets up the Renegades. Why?
Because he wants to bring balance to the Force. And then he leaves for some reason, maybe because he wants the kid. And then John Boyega, you know, goes
Andy, you
evil.
Can't make fun of his for not but explaining
not
things.
I've got a little bit. I've got more answered questions.
No, you've got filled in backstory, which is really good. Like the idea that the system would need to change so everyone gets 100 years, and that's what you get. Like I was what I was thinking of. Something along those lines with mine, but yours, you've got really good backstory, and then you go, okay, so there's time Jesus and he's blessed this guy, he's gonna run for the in full runtime of the movie and then jump in a portal at the end. That's all.
We get enough. We have this, like there's still a third, obviously. We get enough in this film that it needs to be, it could be a second.
It
opens the franchise world more. Ross said he liked that. But he didn't do it in his pitch for some reason. And I've got heavy symbolism like the first one.
That's fair.
Fucking weighted on your shoulders.
Yeah, the first one is not subtle.
No. Time Jesus. I like to think of the time Messiah more, but
that's who Jesus is.
Yeah. But no, he's a Messiah. I don't want him to be actually Jesus.
Don't want it too symbolic.
No. Pick mine. It's more interesting than both of them. Drew's is a little bit mine, and Ross's. Yeah, it's just another kind of like time heist. Yeah, it's not as interesting as mine. I think mine would be more interesting to the public.
What? Why? Okay. Why do you think yours is more interesting to the
public? No, Ross,
it gives you more about the world and where, like, time. You're literally just like, oh, someone wants to get more time.
You're saying yours
is
100 years after the original movie.
No one gives a shit if Justin Timberlake is in this film. When was the last time Justin Timberlake was, like, an important box office draw? Yeah, Troll. Exactly. It's not aimed at anyone who grew up knowing his music or the other movies he's been in. They're like, he's just desperately ringing his agent, like, can I just do some more film work? Because it's good money and it doesn't take as long as writing an album.
I put the original cast members in the movie. So pick mine.
Amanda Seyfried, who's literally like pregnant and that's it.
Yeah.
She's in the movie though.
She doesn't need to be in the whole movie. It's not about her. That's why I always sideline my female characters to be pregnant. Because I'm a massive sexist. I'm joking. I'm not.
This one, fucking hell, this one's so difficult. Like, the fact.
I mean, I'm very glad I wasn't pitching a sequel. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you bastard.
I thought it'd be a really good one. I thought it'd be a great one.
We came up with this in like 3 days.
It should have been.
To be fair. I'm impressed. Yeah.
I say these are three good pitches for three wildly different ideas. I'm going to take the reins back. Thank you all for your great debating. It was great to see such passion and rivalries brewing. but yeah, I'm going to take it back. And because they are such wildly different ones, they all hold themselves to account. And I'm impressed that in such short time you all came up with such good ideas. So who's this episode's winner going to be? Is it going to be Ross's time device, kind of like with Benedict Cumberbatch in as well? Is it Doctor Strange and the time stone? is it going to be Drew's Truman time and the dome of time and all the other time references? Or is it literally, as we've said, going to be Andy's time Jesus, time Messiah, Kronos, the god of time. Who fucking knows? I really, really enjoyed all three pitches, and each hold their own light. This week, I am going to give third place purely because I think it's not a knock, but it just needed fleshing out a bit more for me. And Drew, you know for a while, it's one to take. And you should be very proud that you came up with so much in such a short time, because I'm really one of them. I had to give you two lines. But yeah, I enjoy the idea of Sarah kind of building it and trying to fight for her family and then discovering all this other shit going on outside of it. Perhaps it kind of went on too many different strands, but they can be pulled back in. My second place... is a toughie. I'm going to give my second place this week to Andy, just because I feel like we moved too much into a fantasy realm from sci-fi.
You didn't like fucking time Jesus.
As an atheist, I'm not really one where I buy into symbolism in movies anyway, and when it's heavily
thrown
at me...
He might not be Jesus. That's
Who knows what's the other side of the rip? I can see where you were going with it. I think for me, there's just something more locked in human constructs, and that's exactly where I'm going to go with Ross's time device as this week's winner. But not to knock any of them, I really enjoyed all three pitches, boys. That's fair. Could you knock this cold out of me?
I have to say,
though,
when Ross was doing his pitch and time was being passed back and forth, I didn't see it as time going in and out of the people. I saw like Batman, you know, the old Batman like comics and show where it says like whack and pow. So I saw like -10, -15 and stuff, +5.
Fantastic stuff. There we go, chaps. Ross, congratulations. Very Thank you. In there. Oh, what yes. are we doing next episode? Yes.
So, it is the season to get spooky in the next episode. So, what better film to do than a science fiction action comedy?
If it's the film I think you're going to pick, it's definitely horror, so hopefully.
Go for it.
I want you to pitch me your sequels to the 1991 Hulk Hogan film, Suburban Commando. Spooky.
For the listeners at home. Is going to be another episode like Commando where we debate the relevance of a cult classic versus a classic cinematic
Maybe,
episode?
Maybe.
Okay, I'm so excited to rekindle that argument.
Listeners,
or we can do a Halloween movie if you want.
No, nah. Let's do it. Let's do Hulk Hogan.
I mean, we've got another two. There's 2 weeks in the Halloween season. Four weeks in the Halloween season, so we can do another one later.
Very true, very true. Yeah, we can save ourselves for that one. What's it called again?
Suburban Commando. And no one I know has ever heard of this movie. So our listenership may tank in this episode. So we'll see. We'll see.
Because it's already astronomical at the moment. So
yeah.
Fantastic stuff. There you go. I keep wanting to say Supreme Commando, but I feel like that's a video game. Next episode, then, we will be pitching sequels to Suburban Commando with Hulk Hogan.
Oh God.
1991's cocaine steroid fueled Hulk Hogan. Cool. This could go anywhere. Well, listeners, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Did I make the right choice? I often feel like I'm going to get bashed for my choices, but I feel like this week I might be onto it. But you tell us. You let us know if I did or not. We want to know. Andy will love it if you back him, and we'll never hear the end of it. So maybe just do it lightly if you're going to. But to do that, you need to be on our social channels. You know where to find us at Sequel Pitch. We're on X, Twitter, X, we'll call it, Facebook, Insta, Threads. We're on them all. You know where to find us. Until next time, though, we're going to sign off on our usual standard. It's goodbye from this week's first runner-up, Drew Toynbee.
Goodbye, everybody.
It's goodbye from this week's second runner-up, Andy Henry.
Time, Jesus. Dun, 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 dun. It's a show. It's a show, not a movie. I got it wrong.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for this TV series pitch. And it's goodbye from this week's runner-up, Ross Hampson.
Bye. I just went into a time hole, sorry.
A time rip.
Yeah.
He's just let a time rip go. All right. It's goodbye for this week's very jammed up winner. It's this week's jammed up host. I do apologize.
Everyone who heard the pitches this week soon. Is a winner.
Yeah.
Very true. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining us as always.
Bye.